Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, or wake up, sleepyheads. It's time for the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, which occurs right here every Saturday night on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and more. I'm Colin. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars.
Travis.
Sean.
Jenny.
Brett.
And every week we pick a movie and watch it for your edification and enjoyment. This week, Brent picked the movie. Brent, what did we watch tonight?
Sometimes for neither.
We watched Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. We all say it like that. Yeah, right.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Groundhog Day. Rise and shine, woodchuckers. Don't forget your booty, because it's cold out there. It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach? Not hardly.
It seems like you've been to Groundhog Day a couple times before. Seen it.
I repeat this day over and over again.
All right, just so we get this out of the way, when was this movie made?
92.
And it was directed by...
Harold Ramis.
All right. Yeah, that's so this is the reteaming of Harold Ramis. It was written. And
it was directed by Harold Ramis.
It was?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying it was directed by Harold Ramis.
Yes. Yeah.
And this, so they and were written. The reteaming of two halves of the Ghostbusters.
The story is actually by Danny Rubin, and the screenplay is by Danny Rubin and Harold Ramis.
Yes.
Oh. Did Harold Ramis direct Caddyshack?
Yes.
Okay. Also with Bill Murray.
Yes.
All right. So there we go. We're establishing some kind of track record here for these two guys working together.
Wrote Stripes.
Yeah, well, these guys have always worked
Stripes?
Together.
I believe he directed Stripes.
That wasn't Ivan Reitman?
Maybe it was Ivan Reitman.
Harold Ramis was a writer on SNL, so when they like broke into movies, they just kind of like, you know, naturally... just still kept together and blah, blah, blah. This is the movie that their falling out was about. Because
what?
Yeah. Because
what?
Bill Murray wanted this to be a way more like a more of a serious movie. You know?
It felt like a very serious movie.
It got serious.
I know. Can you imagine if this was more serious?
Right.
Fucking Bill Murray. Fucking guy's a goddamn prima donna.
Huh.
Well, it was. I know that you picked this is because it was part of your time travel series, Brent.
It does not.
Yes.
This is not time travel.
All right, well, and there we go. There's the two opposing points of view. Let's hear the pro-time travel Groundhog Day version.
Well, I don't know if I am pro.
I don't think he can be. He doesn't age. He dies.
He's like
technically.
He's like in a metaphysical rut, is what I call it. A metaphysical rut.
He's technically been in Groundhog Day.
The idea that he... I mean, he does continue to relive the same...
He's not traveling anywhere.
Day over and over, but it doesn't follow the rules like that. The way I know them, of time travel, where there's not like he's not duplicating himself. He's going back as himself and reliving the same day over and over.
There's no device. There's no. He has no control over it. He has to. I mean, because this is almost like a. It's almost like a Christmas Carol in a weird way,
yeah.
Right? It's
yeah.
the idea that. You're a grumpy fucking egotist guy, and you're not going to go forward in life. You're going to be in this rut, and so you learn to appreciate others. And, like, throughout the movie, he thinks he could pretend his way through... Well, he's not even really trying to appreciate people. He's really just trying to use the knowledge that he learns about Rita, the producer played by...
Andy McDowell.
The beautiful Andy McDowell.
Some would say that. Some would say the
if you saw her Vanity Fair cover with her body like painted as a suit and she's naked, you'd be with me.
I'd
go look for that Vanity Fair. You know how they do that?
Yeah.
How they paint the suits on.
I'm pretty sure Demi Moore did that. I remember that one.
Andy McDowell's is pretty stunning. Yeah, so...
Well, I was actually surprised that, like, there's a point in the movie where he does seem to be, like, you know, because he's a stuck-up weatherman from Pennsylvania, goes to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania for the Groundhog Day thing. Well, everybody's seen this movie, right?
I'm sure.
He relives the same day over and over again. But there's a point in the middle of the movie where he gets Andy McDowell to basically fall in love with him. He has, like, this perfect day with her. And I'm like, is it over? Because you can't tell how long you've been watching the movie. Because, I mean, I know there's a three-act structure there, but it's like because it's the same scenes or variations on the same scenes over and over again, it's like, how long? Has it been an hour and a half? Maybe. And then he wakes up the next morning and has to do it all over again still. You're like, huh, how does he get out of this time loop?
Because he doesn't really mean it. All he's doing is learning things and implicating or using the the information to try to gain her favor. So he's not really trying to find out who she is. He's just copying things he hears about her and just make sure that he puts that into the next day.
He's basically just trying to get laid.
He is basically just trying to get laid. Even though, because supposedly, I don't know if this, I mean, they don't say this, but I've always thought that he can't admit to the fact, because you can see this when he first sees Rita, you see his eyes widen and kind of like, you know, he has a moment on his face.
Yeah, right at the very beginning.
Of that you can see like, oh, this dude like is into her. And then he keeps making jokes, right? He just keeps on making really friendly jokes. So he's automatically flirting with her. That's what I kind of like about this movie. There's no like... This movie acts like you already know these characters, and I kind of like that. I kind of like that. We don't need to get to know Rita. We're going to get to know Rita the whole movie. So when they introduce her, they just jump into... they got a work relationship, of course. You know, she's the producer, he's the weatherman, right? Mm-hmm. So talking is natural. You know, you don't need a reason for them to talk. You don't need that bullshit. So you can just go right into... He's just trying to make her laugh. He's just trying to... whatever, but then, yeah, as soon as he gets in his little rut thing, that's when, like, you know, some days he'll be an asshole to her, some days he'll, like, be this perfect guy to her, but no matter what, I think she sees something unauthentic in it, right? And that's why she's always, the day's never turning out perfect, he's not going to move on to the next day, because he's not, it's the same difference between... It's like when you talk to somebody, you can either talk to somebody to hear yourself talk, or you can actually be interested in who this person is. And he's really not interested in anybody is. He's, you know...
Yeah, that's the first half. Phil Collins. That's the first half of when you see the constant repeats, he's not interested.
Yeah, right, Phil Collins.
Connors.
Phil Connors. I was like, Phil Collins.
Phil Collins? Right.
Genesis? Yeah.
Phil Connors?
Superman, where are you now? He does learn piano later, so...
Yeah, I mean, it goes through that progression of, you know, like, what would you do if you had one day that you could live over and over again, you know? So he goes through kind of the, well, then I can do whatever the hell I want. Because, you know, I mean, that's like the ultimate self-involvement, right? It's like, I have no consequences. I can do whatever the hell I want. I can just fuck around. And then eventually he gets tired of that. And
well, Brett, you might be able to... kind of like remind me more of this on the audio commentary. Harold Ramis talks about how what this is, it's the what are the seven
layers of hell,
stages seven of grief,
yeah, or death or whatever the hell, right? Is the seven, I think that's
what,
seven,
denial,
like, denial, acceptance,
bargaining,
bargaining. That's what he goes through this, you know, because he is, I guess, in a way, dead, you know, or he figures he's dead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, life is your life meaningless if it's just like, I mean, you know, it's stripped of all consequences, right? I mean, he knows everything, he can do everything, and nothing ever happens, you know, to him if he, you know, he can even kill himself.
But nothing ever happens because, like, outside of this movie, looking at what more I think the story is about, is the idea that if you don't somehow learn to be a better person towards those around you, you find yourself in this constant day in and day out of you're alone. You know, nobody fucking likes him in this movie. I mean, at the beginning, just
so
everybody knows he's an
so
asshole.
So he's hit rock bottom.
He's basically
and because
hit,
he
rock,
hit
bottom.
Rock bottom. That's when he gets stuck in the rut.
He basically needs to find his way out of that situation.
Well, it's like it seemed. I mean, it read to me that way, where you know he's built up, you know, I mean, as a character, he's just built up a wall around himself of snarkiness. You know, he built the Bill Murray persona for lack
this
of
this is who
word.
He really is.
But when he actually lives the day over and over and over and over again ad nauseum, he's able to, like, you know, experience everything. You know, it's kind of like, you know, slowing down to smell the roses kind of thing, right?
And right.
Like taking the, you know, like, look, life actually is beautiful here and there. And like, there's these interesting people who are in it. And it's not just perfect, about me.
Yeah, you get the perfect example of that at probably the halfway point of the movie. He's sitting in the diner when, like, nobody else is in there. And he's just reading a book. And then he kind of sits up and looks around at the people.
He's listening to the piano music, and that's when he's listening to the piano music on the radio, and that's when he decides, oh, I'm going to learn piano, because Rita says she wants a dude that plays music or whatever. I thought it was when Rita says, these people are great, they've been out here all night, they party, they sing until they get cold, they go by the fire, warm up, come back and sing some more. He goes, yeah, they're hicks, Rita. I mean, this is that whole, like big city guy versus... Mm. You know, whatever
the small town
mediocre, the people that he sees,
middle America.
These people have no fucking lives. All these people in this town are worthless. Just because he's a fucking celebrity, he's something bigger than everybody else, right? He doesn't see any value in anybody until that whole, you know, he gets to know basically everybody in fucking town. He really truly gets to know each individual and who they are, and I think that's how he's able to kind of separate himself from...
This is John. He likes painting toy soldiers, and he's gay.
I do.
I don't think he really appreciated anything, though, until he helped the elderly man, the homeless guy, and brought him to the hospital, and then realized that that guy dies every single day.
Yeah, there's
like,
nothing
he's been
he
living
to
say over and over again.
That's
this
a big
guy
thing.
Dies. Over, and that's when he really realizes, like he starts to appreciate it more. Like, he may have found out more about those people. He didn't have anything else to do. You know, I'll go talk to someone else.
Today. Well, but then he goes, but when he starts saving, you know, that's when he makes his life's purpose is, I got to catch this kid from the tree. I got to help these ladies with their tire. I got to save the mayor from suffocating the... I mean, that's when he starts making his life
that's
about...
That's when he stops being so selfless. Yeah. Like, he starts being more selfless. So selfish.
So,
more selfless.
So first he learns the timing of the whole town, right? The whole, like, gust of wind. Felix!
A dog.
How are you doing, Norris? Can I get a roll of quarters? I love that scene.
Yeah,
somebody just
that,
knowing...
I'm like, what the hell is he going to do with, like... I mean, just to be able to rob a bank.
Well, remember,
I mean,
he, like, showed up to the Rolls Royce.
I know, but that was like, the you know, you got, how much time do you have? You know, you've got less than 24 hours here. It's like, well, I got $1 million. I got like 8 hours left.
What would you do? Buy a big fancy car, dress like Clint Eastwood, and go to a movie?
That's what I thought was so cool, because, yeah, first he's doing everything in those 24 hours for him. By the end of the movie, those 24 hours are dedicated to everybody in the town, getting frickin' Zod to marry, or getting the lady to marry Zod. I can't believe that's Michael Shannon, man.
Super young and very excitable.
Oh, man. Don't even look like him. It was crazy. Good call.
Did you know he was in the movie, or did you just...
No, because I haven't seen this movie in a while, but looking at him, it's just like, this is a young Michael Shannon.
That's crazy. I would never have gotten
pretty
that,
quick
man.
Out of that. Yeah,
it's just looking at him, it's like, oh.
This guy's just voice, I don't know, his
he's
voice.
Got, he's just that look about him and
well,
the way
he
his
look
mouth.
As creepy as right?
And it's his mouth.
Yeah, he doesn't frown in this movie. That's the problem. That's how you can't see his Michael Shannon.
But if you look. Stare at him, you can't see it.
Yeah.
Brent? Oh, shit. Brent fell asleep again.
Well, I mean...
If you're not going to contribute, give me some more rum.
I do want to cover more about the time travel situation.
Quote,
going
unquote,
on.
We're going to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't think that we really covered that at all yet, but...
Well,
I mean...
Sorry. Go ahead.
What were you going
to
say?
I was just going to say one of the things that... I know that contribute to you choosing this as a time travel movie is, like, we've been searching time travel movies and getting all these different lists, and it's on every single one, like,
really?
Top 10.
Really?
Time travel movies. Every time. Groundhog Day's on there.
It doesn't feel like it's not a time travel
well,
movie.
Well, it's on
I mean, time is involved.
Yeah, it's a time loop, right?
The idea that, like, if you had a time machine, what would you do with it? And how would you explore going back and changing something from the past? Only the thing that's unique about this movie is he only has 24 hours to basically change his entire life and everyone's life around him, really. I mean, you know, I mean, like, everybody, like, if you think about, if I had a time machine, I would go back and I would do this differently. But now he has the opportunity. He can't fix what happened the day before or the day after, but he can change what happens on that day. But the way that he changes it is almost like a ripple effect to where it's fixing, like, all of his problems from the past, but at the same time, it's also fixing how he's going to be as a person in the future, and also how the people, especially that town, are, but, like, you know, how his life is going to be from here on out. I mean, so it is, it's like a weird butterfly effect that he's able to do with 24 hours.
Question, which, then, is the Christmas Carol a time travel story?
I see, that's another one, I think.
Well, there is time travel. The ghost of Christmas past takes him back to his childhood. Past, present,
future. That's time.
He can only see himself. He's not interacting. What are
we
saying?
We either call it a time travel movie, or it's a movie that has some aspect of time travel in it. Like, I think you can separate that. I wouldn't call Christmas Story a time travel movie.
He travels back to the past.
Right, but do you?
He does it. But he's shown the past.
But when you, Christmas
he can't,
Story.
He can't, he's not seen or.
Ask anybody, describe a Christmas story. What genre would you put Christmas Story in?
Christmas?
How would you. How would
Christmas Carol.
Or Christmas Carol. Christmas yeah, not Christmas Story. How would you describe
ghost story.
It? Many other things. I don't think time travel. Yeah, movie. Time travel movie doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Groundhog Day.
And by the way, Bill Murray's in Scrooged.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that too when we were watching. I'm like, shit, this is when Bill Murray was like in everything.
Yeah.
He's like in Scrooged and this. Yeah.
And post Ghostbusters.
Yeah, keep going.
No, there was something else that was like on my mind that I'm like blanking out on now while we were watching it. It's not coming back.
It was Where the Buffalo Roam. I don't
know. Caddyshack? Were you in Caddyshack?
No. This was like the 90s. Right? This is 90. What'd you say, 92?
What else was there, Bill Murray?
God.
What about Bob?
Yeah, what about Bob? About Bob? There you go. Yeah. That was
what
the
about
one.
Bob? Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
Yep. Then he just kind of receded and became serious. Bill Murray.
He was always lost in translation. He was always serious, Bill Murray. The only reason he did Ghostbusters is so Columbia would fund the Razor's Edge, which is the most fucking boring psychological. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, but
I
mean,
hate Bill Murray.
He's still, you know, Wes Anderson uses him to, like, that's the Bill Murray. Like, he sees what Bill Murray is, and he uses him,
yeah,
as almost as a tool in his movies.
But he never gets like the leading man stuff anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
because he's quiet. Yeah. Like, today's Bill
nobody
Murray
can get,
is just
because nobody can get a hold of him on his phone
camera.
Line.
Yeah.
That's why. I'd
say he was kind of the
he never answers
man.
His
that
phone.
Was fairly recent.
And which one?
St. Vincent.
Yeah, he has had a resurgence.
That's a good one.
He's becoming more and more popular now. I think it's because of his nightlife. Like,
I think so.
He gets a lot.
He gets
a lot
out.
Of stories.
He
about
does indeed.
But I mean,
no
he,
one will ever.
He's
believe
funny,
him.
But it's also kind of a serious-esque movie. But he's, you know, he plays Bill Murray. He plays himself. You know, at times where he's got that sarcastic.
Yeah, he plays a curmudgeon, sarcastic asshole.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, that's the thing. Like, usually with Bill Murray. And I guess this is going to be like a testament to his performance in this movie. Usually Bill Murray, like even when he's being quote unquote serious, you can still feel the Bill Murray, you know, the snarky guy mm-hmm. behind that. Like, I'm just kind of doing this. But in this movie, he does, to his credit, kind of go all the way. I mean, like,
yes.
All the pretense of, you know, is not there at the end of this movie. I mean, he's just kind of like, you know. This is who this character is, and this is how I'm playing it. And it's like, oh, wow, I was impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different guy than who he was at the beginning. And the fact that they were probably doing like a lot of those scenes on the same day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's what
and
I was going to bring up. That's what I was going to bring up.
What
was the shooting on this like? It had to be like they shot every part that they needed of a certain shot because they have the setup.
It has to look
and
like
they would
the
just
same.
Shoot it.
I know. That's what I was going to ask you guys what
and
you thought
over.
About that. Like, do you think they reshot it?
Do you think they
wanted
especially
to
like
repeat it? Or
oh,
they
yeah.
just.
I mean,
because you got all the people there. I mean, I was thinking just of that, like the crowd scene.
Right. That's what I kept thinking.
It's like, okay, they go through it and it's like, all right, places, everybody. We're going back to one.
All right.
Everybody resets.
Now this is
but then this
two
one,
times
Bill
later.
Murray has to be in a different state. This one, you're bewildered.
Yes. There's probably this like, one, what, you've 10 done it like 10 different times. Like versions.
You know,
of
you think that made it easier to shoot this movie?
Well, see, that's why. Seems like that's why I was wondering if maybe like with Andie MacDowell, like when they're sitting at the bar and she orders her drink, like she sounds exactly the same every single time. So I wondered if they like used that same shot and then like edited it really good so that Bill Murray, it just looked like he was coming.
But really, they're just, there's different takes.
No, there's tiny.
I was curious what you guys
there's
thought.
There's tiny differences.
So the words.
There's tiny differences in delivery.
But, yeah, but I mean, they're tiny. I mean, she is
very,
pretty
no,
much
very
like,
tiny, yes. She's dead on.
Yeah, doing exactly the same inflection, right? The same,
look,
tone, everything.
Like she's looking when she's fixing his tie, she's looking at the same place every time. Like, for doing the repeats of everything. Like, everyone was spot on and repeating their actions and their inflections and shit.
Yeah, that's going to be really hard to do. It's I mean, I still think it's
and
like...
And tiring. How many times I had to do all that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's an
you
actor's
think that'd be
day.
Hard? Right. That'd be easy. All you're doing is one setup and doing different takes with different dialogue.
No, I'm saying
that's easy.
The difficulty is in Bill Murray has to... He's,
but he doesn't. He changes everything does.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, he has to know, as an actor, if I'm going to shoot all that stuff in one day... I haven't shot the scenes that follow this that link back to this where I do it again. They're just doing it all one right after the other. And he has to go like, okay, so in this, Rita has broken up with me and, you know, this has happened and I've seen this, you know, and like, you got to be in that headset. Like how quickly after you did the last one, like, okay, now we're going to do this one. It has to be, it has to work.
It's that hard. All he's doing is like ordering a drink. Seriously, he's ordering a drink like four different ways.
But no, but think like that crowd scene, which they come back, I think is the one they come back to the most probably.
Yeah.
At the beginning where he goes up to shoot his shot for the groundhog. That's the one where his, where he's at changes the most throughout the movie. Because they go to it a lot at the beginning and they come back to it a couple times at the second half.
I would say when he's depressed, I can see
right,
how.
Right, well, and but he's got to do all of that within that same day.
All of that. Is acting that hard? Come on, guys. All of that. All he's doing is saying, sweet vermouth on the rocks with a twist.
Well,
you know?
I think it's...
I'd like to say
well,
a prayer
I think
to...
I think it can be. It depends on the actor.
Well,
I'm
saying
he makes it look easy.
But where I think it's difficult for an actor is... I mean, I just remember I was watching the making of Insomnia. With Al Pacino, right, where he's supposed to be, you know, like getting more tired as the movie goes on. But they didn't shoot in that order. So, like, he went and, you know, I mean, to his credit, I mean, this is their job, right?
Yeah,
he goes
that's what
in
I'm saying.
And makes
job.
A
well,
note
make it,
of, like, where, how tired and what he's going to look like and where he's going to, you know, at every point in the script. So when he'd show up to shoot that scene, he's like, okay,
and
this is guy number four.
You got directors so like, there helping you. You got, like, it's not just you alone, like, doing your own thing. Everybody knows. It's not still, God damn it.
I think
acting
still,
so hard, people, okay?
I think that,
acting. Oh,
I think
pretending
that
to be
tough.
So hard.
That's got
to
be tough.
Okay.
Did he really jump off that building?
No.
That was a pretty bad
stunt guy.
That was kind of...
I was looking for it, too. I'm like... I haven't seen this one. We'll see if that's Bill Murray. It's not Bill Murray.
Yeah, I was surprised at how close of a shot that is.
Right?
That you would just go with just like...
They were just hoping
it's a
like...
a guy with brown hair, you know?
They are hoping his hair got over his face soon enough.
That's why
he
just
flipped over.
That's why he flips over probably, right? Because he does, like, as soon as he jumps, he flips over. So you most of the time, you're seeing his back and his side.
Right.
Yeah.
So is his brother that's in this that plays the mayor or whatever?
Yeah.
Is he?
So that's
Brian,
his brother.
Yeah, Brian Doyle.
Brian
something,
yeah.
Yeah, he's older for sure.
He is
sure.
Older? Okay.
Yeah, he's got like six brothers.
Well, see.
Yeah, they're all actors.
I didn't think that, like in others, because he's in other movies with Bill.
Wayne's
like
World.
He's in
oh,
Ghostbusters
sorry, yes.
too. But
in
like,
Ghostbusters
it didn't look like there was that much of an age difference. But in this one, it looked like there was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
Like in Ghostbusters, I didn't think he looked that much older than Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know what the difference is. But I do think
Caddyshack.
I forget who is in Ghostbusters.
The only one I know in Ghostbusters.
Like, when they get committed.
Yeah, in Ghostbusters 2, he gets committed.
He's the psychiatrist. Down, yes, that's right.
And he gets committed by his other brother. Those are both of his brothers walking down.
The other one's his brother, too?
The other one's his brother.
The slimy mayor assistant?
Yeah.
Really?
That's Bill Murray's brother, too.
I did not know that. I did not know
that. Yeah, dude. Like, that's how many Murrays are working.
Did not know that. Yeah. See, I only knew, like, Joel Murray. That's pretty much the only other one I know. I didn't know that was his brother.
Yeah, dude. Is that so
that's
insane?
Fascinating.
In Ghostbusters?
Good to know.
In Ghostbusters 2. In part 2.
Right.
the slimy right, like, mayor.
They were threatening to go to the assistant. Press. I was protecting your interest.
And I want to say that either it was Brian Doyle Murphy was in Second City, and that's why Bill Murray didn't plan on being an actor. It's just because one of his older brothers went to Second City. That's why he joined. Became America's fucking biggest goddamn.
I still don't think Bill Murray plans to be an actor. I'm pretty sure that's his outlook as it is right now.
Yes, the mayor's assistant in Ghostbusters 2.
Are you lying?
No, why would I fucking lie?
No, I'm trying to... Yes. I don't know if you're serious or not.
Of course I'm serious.
Well, you're laughing, so I thought you were fucking with me. No, but the guy that Lenny fires in Ghostbusters 2, that's his brother?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Wayward son.
I got a question for Brent. Is It's a Wonderful Life a time travel movie?
Is that the same thing as...
I think it's the same thing.
Christmas Carol. Now remember, Brandon.
No, it's the same thing as Christmas Carol. Ghost takes her out. Or the angel
You brought this on yourself. Go. That's all I'm going to say. This is your decision for this
No, I mean, this year. We've already established that there's some kind of... it's a time loop, so it's time. Time is being...
There's a time
it's
element.
It's being all timey-wimey in these, but...
Metaphysical time.
Timey-wimey. I like that. We're going to use timey-wimey from now on.
It seems like It's a Wonderful Life is more interdimensional. Like, because, and I know that you have a retort for this, but the idea that he sees his life how it would be without him there versus, like, say, like Groundhog Day or Christmas Carol, where you see your life, you almost get an alternate version of your own life. I mean, like, because you could argue that Groundhog Day is all interdimensional, too. It's almost like, this one day is somehow like the epicenter of the universe, and everything like shoots off of that one day. So all these different dimensions are shooting off of this one center, like creating like spokes on a tire. Kind of. This is the way I see it.
Because it is really his most hated Groundhog Day. He fucking hates it. It's his like most hated thing. I mean, even at the beginning when she's like, "This is your third year, isn't it?" Four. You know, I mean, he fucking hates it that much that it brings out the worst in this character.
Well, yeah, and I mean, even when he's doing his forecast, it's so sarcastic. He's just done with his.
He really is. With his, like, this is it. He has hit rock bottom as far as.
I don't have a weatherman like that on air right now.
Oh, I'm not going to talk about our weather lady, but I'm a little
upset about it. I kind of want that.
We live in a bunker. I don't know what you're talking about. we are in ambiguous U.S.
I mean, it is kind of weird how, like, somehow he really takes to, like, somehow getting to know Rita, somehow using eternity to win the affections of his producer, takes center stage. It's very weird. I mean, maybe that's the point why he keeps getting stuck, right? Because it's not until he starts saving people. It's like when he doesn't worry about impressing Rita.
Well, I think that's it. I think impressing Rita at some point becomes an option because he's got so much time. Like he's done other things, looked at other things, figured out how to rob the bank and everything. And that Rita becomes an option to get to know her. But he goes with it and then he goes off of it, and then it comes back to him.
Yeah,
and that's when his
I think that's what's important about
out.
It.
Yes.
It's like because he makes her the focus for a while,
for a long time.
Right,
that's that scene where I thought the movie was over, but then it still kept going. And it's like, okay, that didn't solve it because he had to, kind of let go of her, and she was attracted to him anyway.
Yeah, because then he makes that big, beautiful speech, and then she's like, "You want to get a cup of coffee?" And he's like, "I can't. I got errands to run." And when he goes saving the fucking world.
He's gonna leave that alone and have it come back to him, and that's how he writes everything.
Yeah.
I think it's when he stops thinking about himself so much.
Right.
Because like when he has that scene, he's got errands to run. Is he didn't go do piano lessons or anything. He just went and
he must have,
because
she's like, he's my student. So he must have gone there that day.
By that point, he was pretty good. I mean, if you look at it, like the original script was like he spent 10,000 years Was it? One day. Yeah, it's something ridiculous.
I thought it was like 10 years or some shit.
No, it's like 10,000.
Ramus, on the commentary, Ramus says 10 years, and then somebody maybe last year or 2 years ago did a breakdown and figured it out as 8 years, 8 months, and like 16 days.
How did and they then Ramus, figure this out?
They went through they broke it down to charts and
but
shit.
But they might have read...
And then Ramus came back and said, eh, maybe it wasn't 10. Maybe it was like 30 or 40 years.
In the original script, they have like all those books that are in the... That are in the bed and breakfast. That's how Phil keeps track of time, is by like the pages of the books or whatever the hell. I remember Ramus talking about that.
What? Is that in the movie?
No, it's
in
the script. It's in the original script.
Oh.
So maybe either people read the original script to figure out the time or
possibly whatever. But yeah, they broke it down.
I would like
hardcore
to read this original script.
But like, I mean, how can you like I guess based on his ability to play, but it seems like he's like when he's playing the jazz piano or whatever you want to call
it, jazz piano.
That's like somebody that's played the piano their entire life, you know?
Yeah.
So just to do that is like 40 years,
right? And that's what Ramus came back to. He specifically pointed out the piano thing, and like, yeah, you know, it takes people a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
Well, if you do it every single day, though.
Yeah.
And, but is that like the only thing he does? And then he moves on to something else?
Yeah, because he does like, ice sculpting. I kind of like to think, you know how, like, I mean, they make it seem like
ice sculpting would take more time than learning to play the piano.
Yeah.
He makes it seem like he's walking by all those ice sculptures. But sometimes it's like, fuck, I wonder if he did all those. Like, you know, he could have done all those and not just been inspired by walking.
You know, it was weird. At one point, I know this wasn't the focus of it, but I was like, man, by the time he actually syncs back up with his own life again, he's going to have forgotten like so much of it, you know. But I'm like, eh, I guess it won't matter because you'll know French and now you know how to play the piano, right? And now you can do all this other stuff. But like, to be a weatherman has to be like, I mean, we're talking 30 years. It's been since you talked to your parents.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like,
right.
You know, you're going to forget a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So. Because he can't get out.
And yeah, the lines are dead.
That's also, I mean, like, I'm sure it wouldn't matter, but
blizzard.
It does raise the question because the fact that the blizzard traps him in Punxsutawney. The idea that if he could get back to Pittsburgh, would he have an opportunity to continue his life? You know, like, is this anomaly only happening in this town? Because of the blizzard, like, if he put on snowshoes and walked back to Pittsburgh,
something would stop him. He'd die before he got out.
Yeah.
Something.
So it's just the universe is like, this is a lesson that you have to learn.
Right. The universe is just like, no, this is where you're going to stay.
So
he'd like, a tree would fall on him at some point before he got out too far.
Which is a very, that's like a big time travel theory, right? The idea that no matter how much you want to change your fate, you can't. That, like, that's, you know, I mean,
that's a big element of time travel in general.
There's a number of stories or movies that subscribe
the universe,
to that.
Yeah, or the universe kind of is always, or corrects itself, or is kind of goes one direction.
I mean, even though this movie shows us being stuck in time as like a physical thing, I mean, I think it really is focusing on just a person is stuck in time. His character is stuck in time. Mm-hmm. He's this fucking dick. And regardless of, you know, blizzards and it's really all about his own personal, like, moving on. Like, it's...
Yeah, but he helps so many people, too, at the same time. I mean,
but that is him. That's him moving on. That is him traversing time in a weird way.
Yeah.
He's stuck as an egotist. And then it's only when he learns to be selfless, that's how he can move on. It's weird.
But
he's trapped himself in time. Nothing else is trapping him. He is trapped himself in time.
But it's weird that, well, I mean, I guess it. At no point did they, like, bring, you know, like, religion into it. Or, like,
no, they do.
Or God, or, you know.
Only God can make a tree. I mean, it's not a big statement, but it just doesn't
seem like it's like, this is God messing with me. He never goes to church and, like, is begging God to, like, please let me out of this.
That's one point. I think the filmmakers probably purposefully...
So it is the universe.
Right.
You know,
they bring it up. I mean, he kind of talks and it's like, I don't, I'm,
But then it
I'm not the
like,
god.
But there
I don't
is
think.
Then some kind of we're saying there's like an intelligence that's making this day repeat for him to teach him a lesson, like a parent would a child.
I don't think so.
Something
so you
bigger.
Think it's just it's self generated. Yeah, like it's somehow he got
like,
caught in
to
a,
me this like, whole thing like, him, and him, like, this
him
whole
going
thing
down
could
is
be a dream.
Right.
Could, you know,
this whole thing like him reaching bottom has created this something around him that just eventually it got so big it trapped him in this day.
Hmm.
Something of that sort.
Temporal anomaly.
Something like that.
Time trail.
Because it's still like... Cause like
yeah, I... Sorry.
No, I was just going to say real quickly, like, when he has Rita in his apartment, he's always, you know, stay. It's only until she, like, wants to stay, that's when, like, the night rolls, you know? Well, I mean, even though she says, you said stay, so I stayed. But, you know, she wanted to stay. He didn't have to, like, coax her with all this history of who she actually is and...
Mm.
You know, French poetry and blah, 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 blah.
I know, and she said he fell asleep before she did.
Right? Yeah, so he wasn't trying to fuck her, you know, right.
He wasn't trying to stay away
Nancy?
To see if she would stay.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
see if she would be there as well. Like, yeah. at that point, he didn't, that wasn't the point of her being there. And like we said, again, that's the point where it works. Right. He didn't care. He didn't want to stay up and watch the clock to
I mean,
see if she'd be there at the
he
end.
Shows
he
shows
that
with that Nancy
point.
Taylor character, right? It shows right from the get-go that, oh, beautiful woman, where'd you go to high school? Who is her teacher? Blah, blah, blah. Then he uses it to try to fuck her, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it right there, it shows you who this guy is.
Right.
So then when he's doing it to Rita, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Even
yeah.
though in his head, he thinks it's a little bit more righteous or whatever, but it's the same fucking thing. He just wants to get into her pants by using, like, crazy esoteric
knowledge.
But
at the same time, he's slowly falling, like, well, maybe just gaining stronger feelings for her. I mean, he does say that he loves her, but...
Even yeah. at a point, it's not about sex. I think even at a point, he's just trying to do right by Rita to get out of his situation. Not necessarily sex, but to... It's still not real, but he's trying to make the day right by her in order to get out of the situation.
I think you see that doesn't work. I think the idea that he's in love with her is
yeah.
there, because even when he's with Nancy,
he
calls out Rita's name.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the
oh,
idea
of course.
That he wants to
well,
be
yeah,
with
that
her.
That was before he realized it, that he was attracted to her, I think. That's
but
when he realized he wanted to get with Rita, was when he kept saying her name when he was with Nancy.
Nancy Taylor? I love how they mimic how Ned Ryerson... Like calls out the win Ned or Phil Connors.
Ned.
Nancy
like
Taylor.
When she's accepted.
But I like that that scene where you know that they have that really like oh they build the snowman. He makes his quirky little joke about Snowman City. The kids throw snowballs. They go back to the room. And then the next time. They show how he's like, he's amped up. He's trying to force it. He's trying
yeah.
to force, like, oh, I felt next to you in the snow.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, he's.
I know this is what happens next, so let's just get to this
let's
part.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Let's just go to yeah. it. I think that's a really important part in this
mm-hmm.
movie where, yeah, even though he can naturally make her fall in love, he's, like, just trying, like,
just,
way fucking too hard.
Yeah.
Not very interesting.
All right, so Igor.
Igor,
where are you at?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Thanks a lot, Igor, we've got email. No, wait, it's not email. Somebody reached out to us. On Facebook. You can too. It's facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. If you write to us on there, we'll probably read your comment on the air. Nick Hammond, a frequent contributor to the Saturday Night Freak Show, wrote us about.
The only contributor.
Wait, there's Dom.
Okay.
If you want, was it Andrea? Andrea, if you're out there. Babadook. I'm sorry, we actually did.
Lexi.
Was it Lexi?
It was Lexi.
We read your comment on the air.
Oh, we lost the Babadook.
And then we lost that
episode.
You guys
lost the Babadook.
So Nick writes, he's a huge fan of the movie, and whenever he comes across this movie on the TV, the channel doesn't change. He says he's seen this movie more times than the days Bill Murray was caught in the time loop. Well, that's amazing.
What did he say?
Wow.
Wait, what did he say? That was...
talking.
More days.
Talking to someone else while you were talking. And totally not paying attention.
Nick says he's a big fan of the movie.
That's it.
And he's seen the movie more times than Bill Murray has been trapped in the time loop.
Oh, that's a bold statement.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Seeing
somewhere
saying,
between 10 years to 10,000 years.
Yeah. 10 years worth of
hilarious.
So that sounds kind of... All right, so wrap-ups. Wrap-ups? Anything else on Groundhog Day? Wrap-ups. All right, that's me. I like Groundhog Day. You know, I'm sitting here watching it tonight.
You laughed.
I don't think I've seen it since 1992. I like it that much. No, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, I think of it as being this comedy. It's a Bill Murray comedy. I watch it. I'm sitting there. I'm like, man, I don't remember this movie being like as sentimental as it is. It's a very, it's not really, I don't know, should we say smaltzy movie?
It can get,
it's a, I mean, not that this negative. Is a bad thing. Right, I mean, yeah. This is like, it's trying to be like a classic Hollywood,
romance.
You know, romance slash like fantasy, you know, it's about positive, you know, having a positive outlook on things, being generally good to people. I don't think there's like anybody swears at all in this entire movie. What's it rated? PG
for thematic.
I mean, it's trying to be, I think, you know, a modern day Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life, you know. So in that respect, I think it succeeds. I'm like, is it a time travel movie? I mean, that's why it kind of blows me away that it's on all these lists.
Because
it doesn't feel like it's a time travel movie at all. Is Edge of Tomorrow a time travel movie? Because that's basically the science fiction version of Groundhog Day.
I don't know.
We're talking about way too many different movies.
I'm going to bring them all up. There's an X-Files episode called Monday. Yes. You should see it. It's Groundhog Day as seen from a character who is not...
The groundhog.
The guy who keeps coming back, which is interesting. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a good movie. I was, you know, like I said before, Bill Murray's performance was, like, you know, surprising, I guess. And I'm like, he did a good job. So
he reaches a lot of places.
Yeah, it was funny. I laughed.
You did?
And then it got very, like, you know, sentimental. It was kind of like...
And then you went...
Yeah. I'm a man. I don't know how to.
I don't know how to love.
So that's a recommendation, Groundhog Day. It's a classic. You got to see it. You probably have. Travis.
This is one of my favorite movies. It's not one of those movies I own just because you see it so, you know, I've seen it so many damn times. There's not a lot to it. So I don't think there's, you know, you don't think you need to go back and rewatch or anything like that. It's just, to me, it's a great comedy movie. I love all the characters in it. I love all the goofy dialogue, all the goofy characters. But I also love how, I mean, I think this movie gets a little demented. My favorite line of the whole movie is the whole, if you want a prediction about the weather, you're asking the wrong Phil. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, it's going to last you the rest of your life. I fucking love that line. I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy's down. But I just like how, I don't know, just one of those movies where I like how, you know, there's that point in that movie where he realizes, like, I've committed suicide probably like 20 times or whatever. I can't kill myself. So the only thing to do is, instead of being down, you know, go up. You know, start living every day for other people. Start actually trying to, like, care for other people. I like how they start showing how he starts asking people, like Elliot, right? His cameraman. Was that Chris Elliot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris Elliot.
Chris Elliot.
Larry. Larry's his name in the movie.
So he tells him, or
we don't talk, Larry. Do you have kids?
Yeah. Throughout the whole movie, he just like makes fun of him. But then by like towards the end of the movie in the third act, yeah, that's when he first asks about if he has kids. It's like, even this dude that he was belittling every day, now he wants to ask him questions about, you know, just about his personal shit instead of just being, oh, I'm the talent. You're the fucking guy that helps me, blah, 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 blah. And the music in this movie, I love the fucking music in this movie. I mean, Nat King Cole, Ray Charles, I mean, it's got the music for that sentimental
Sonny
shit.
And
like,
Cher.
I think it's great. Well, yeah, but you know, that's not, that wasn't like part of the movie music.
I'm just saying.
So put your little hand in mine. But
that's a big part.
That was a good. That was a good chair. That was a good chair.
That was a good chair.
That was a good chair.
So I mean, I like all the acting in this movie. I mean, there's a lot of good comedic actors in this. Yeah, I mean, I highly recommend it. I think it's a great watch. It's one of those movies that I think this is what, even though Bill Murray keeps on saying he wants some deep movie, but I think he's, I mean, the reason I fucking hate him is because I think he doesn't realize that he's already done those movies. He's done the, even though they happen to be comedy, because it's like, well, dude, you open your mouth and you're fucking, he's the only, Bill Murray's one of the only comedians that is popular for playing himself. Bill Murray's never played a different character in any movie. He's Bill Murray.
What about The Razor's Edge?
Yeah, he's Bill Murray, being he's, but super pretentious because he's really young in that. Oh, you got to see The Razor's Edge. Oh, it's fucking wretched. It's so horrible. And he talks down about Ghostbusters, which makes the world happy. This is why I don't understand Bill Murray. He made a movie that makes the world happy for generations and generations, and he bitches about it.
He does. He
fucking bitches about it. Wants nothing to even do with it. It's like, you're fucking, like, Bill Murray needs his own Groundhog Day. You know?
That's the irony.
Wow.
That's the irony.
There you go.
Bill Murray gets stuck making Ghostbusters for the rest of his life.
Stupid. I want to be a real artist, even though I'm popular for being on fucking SNL. Fucking genius.
So yeah, I love this fucking movie, regardless of Bill Murray's attitude. Well, because I heard Bill Murray didn't even talk to Harold Ramis up till like maybe a month or two before Harold Ramis died. Yeah, so that's from this movie up till, 7 months ago? 8 months ago it's been since Harold Ramis died?
Yeah, they had a big falling out.
And it's all over this shit, just because he wants to be a fucking artist. Fucking pretentious fuck. So,
so I recommend
this movie. Hey, Bill Murray, recommend this movie.
Oh, well, that's a glowing review. or recommendation. I recommend the movie as well. I really like this movie. Like Travis said, it's not one that I own because I don't think it's one you don't want to wear it out. But it's one where it's, you know, when it comes on TV, you always sit down to watch it no matter where it's at and finish it.
You just get stuck.
You really do. You do. You really do. It's like, I'll sit down and watch this. I'll get stuck in it. I think it, it all depends on Bill Murray's performance. And I think he does great in this movie. It's one of the only movies that I like Andy McDowell in. Say that. It's like this in Multiplicity.
You hate her upper lip shadow?
Something. Something.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, there you go.
Her lip pushes up so no lighting can get rid of the shadow.
That's right there.
That makes it look like she's got a mustache.
I don't know. Something about her. But I think it's a really good movie. I like the places Bill Murray goes in this movie. You know, the highs and lows and everything. Supporting characters as well. It's a really good movie. I like it. I recommend it. I'm pretty sure everybody who's listening has seen this movie. But it's really good. Time travel movie, I don't think it is. It has time elements in it, but it's not a time travel movie. I don't think you can label it as that. But a very good movie. If you haven't seen it, what the hell? Watch it now.
I like this movie. I think it's one of the first movies where Bill Murray kind of diverts from his classic sarcastic, snarky asshole character. And he gets a little deeper. Not really. I know that's what he wanted to do, but like Travis said, like, I really don't think he can get much deeper than that. I mean, Lost in Translation, maybe.
I'm sorry, but he was silent in Lost in Translation. Right? the scene where he's laying on the bed with Andy McDowell trying to do that when I first saw it, it's like, it's fucking uncomfortable. I don't think he's that, I mean, he's not a great actor. He's a funny fucking dude. Not a great actor.
The scene I'm thinking of is when, like, he's trying to revive the old man. That's really sad. Like, I tear up at that scene. Mm. And, I mean, I think that's a deep scene for Bill Murray.
Even when he's talking to Andy McDowell and he's in, like, his justice coat and the white t-shirt. And he's like, there's a guy about to drop a plate of dishes. 5, 4, 3. During that scene where he's just like, I'm reliving the same day over and over. And there's nothing I can do about it. Like, there's a sadness
restless,
to Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's just exhausted at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, even that scene. Yeah. Going along with the, you know, the old man dying. Like, that's, I like that. That kind of gets me.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Bill Murray.
But, I mean, like, before then, was he really, did he didn't do anything like that before Groundhog Day, right? Am I See, right Rangers in saying
Edge. That? Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry. And when was Mad Dog in Glory? He was the gangster. Robert De Niro was the guy.
Is that like 88?
You guys keep saying things. I know that. Nothing of Bill Murray's body of work. I'll tell you that.
When was he Hunter S. Thompson?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Buffalo Room.
Was 82. That was?
82.
But that was comedic. I mean, he was over the top.
Yeah.
Acting, but it's far out, Bill Murray.
Yeah. Razor's Edge, I want to say, was 84 or 85, because I know he made Ghostbusters 86.
No, maybe 85.
Because I know, I mean, it was financed specifically because he was like, I'll do Ghostbusters if you guys do my fucking hoity-toity pretentious
movie. Isn't it about like a guy who goes off to India and into the Himalayas?
He travels the world to find himself. It's fucking suck-ass.
Awesome. I want to watch it.
Now we got to watch right it. Now. Saturday Night Freak Show.
I tried once.
Okay.
Does he travel through India on a train?
Can't remember.
Because there's a scene in Darjeeling Limited where all the brothers are getting on the train and Bill Murray misses the train that's going through India, traveling through India. They all find themselves on the... I wonder. I don't know.
That's
but...
funny.
That's funny.
Well, this is the first movie I've seen him be versatile in, I guess, besides just funny, sarcastic... Meh. Classic Bill Murray. I shouldn't say Mark because I love Bill Murray. Sorry, Travis. But I recommend it. Time travel.
You can say it. It's okay.
I don't know. It's obviously it's deja vu.
You know.
But I mean, like I said, it's on every single time travel movie list. Like you Google them and it's on every fucking one.
There's a lot of wrong people out there.
Well, I'm just saying. It's on every single one. So, but yes, I would recommend this movie. You should watch it. It's, it has the same storyline as Christmas Carol, I think, but it's a little more funny. A little more, it's creative. A creative twist on a Christmas Carol. More modern day, I suppose. But yes, I like it. I recommend it. Go, Brent.
That's just me then, huh?
That's
yeah.
a time travel nope. fail, Brent. It's a everybody has said you failed.
Well, no, he didn't fail.
And all those people have put it on their top 10 list.
Indeed.
And that's, I mean, I guess that's partly what I wanted from this evening, that we could talk a little bit about it and try and figure it out. And I've been struggling with it myself, like whether or not it actually is a time travel movie. I mean, there's parts of it that really do fall into the whole time travel genre for me, from what I've seen, the idea that you can go back and change something in your own life and alter it, which inevitably makes your life better. That's the fantasy of time travel, right? You can go back. I said this earlier in the podcast, but you can go back, you can change something that you wanted differently, even if it's, you know, beginning, you know, for him, it takes him a long time to figure it out, right? Phil Connors has no idea why he's stuck in this day, but eventually he realizes it's, I think, I mean, I guess A, to make him a better person, but B, to help other people too, and for him to realize the value. I mean, somebody said it, stop and smell the roses, right, Colin? And the idea that, I mean, that's, you're changing, like, you're learning a lesson, in a way. I mean, if we equate it to Back to the Future, the idea.
If we equate it to Back to the Future. But will we?
As we always do. It's the ability to, he's reliving it and he can't do anything about it. He can't control it and he might not like it, but eventually he's learning or the reason why he's doing it throughout the, okay, let's stick to the first Back to the Future. George McFly is taught a lesson, about, you know, I mean himself through Marty McFly that makes George McFly a better person in the end. Like just have Phil Connors, like even if, even if you look at, Michael Shannon's character, you know, I mean, how many years was, did that marriage not work? You know, they got cold feet and they didn't go through with it. And at some point, Phil Connors started changing that. And I think that he did that throughout. How many years before Phil Connors realized that the mayor was choking in the restaurant?
You can make other people happy, not just yourself.
Yeah, he can make a difference.
He can make a difference. He can save people. I mean, that kid, who knows when that kid fell from the tree, broke his back, broke his neck.
Died.
Who knows? I mean, the old man was the idea that you can't change what's going to happen, you know? I mean, that's... You can help. That's the reality of it. And I think Jenny, you said that, like, the idea that that was a turning point in his struggle to get through this day is the idea that, like, that's when he realizes that, like, maybe, because before that, like we all said, I mean, it's all selfish reasons why he's and I think that I would do this too. You know, I mean, you go through the day, you're like, all right, how do I get rich? I'm going to do that first. And then
I'm going to spend 800 years trying to fuck this chick.
Well, he must have had sex with most of the town. Exhausting. Right?
Right.
At least
at some point.
But, and did you also notice how, I mean, like, as it seems to me, like, as the day went on, or as the repeating of the day went on, like, more people were at the diner based on how he had interacted with them throughout the day. Because by the end, he's like, this is so-and-so. This is, you know, Michael Shannon. They're going to get married. This is, you know, like, it was a full thing right after. Because I'm guessing, yeah, based on the timeline, they go from the groundhog to the diner to whatever, to the bar and then the party or whatever that night. But like throughout his 10 years or 10,000 years, he's constantly improving other people's lives, but at the same time improving his own. You know, after we get through the selfishness and the killing himself and a lot of heavy handedness, which I appreciate it. I feel like that character has to go through that arc, and I appreciate that they almost painstakingly show you every aspect of it from being at the bowling alley going, there's no consequences, no hangovers. We can do whatever we want. We can ride on the drive on the train tracks to, I can jump off of a fucking bridge and just end this hopefully. And, you know, like, it's like the disparity of like, what's going to end this, you know, because he gets to that point, but also he goes through heartbreak during that time because, when he does, again, it's selfish, but he thinks he is in love with Rita at the time, and he wants to, or he is in love with Rita, but he thinks that he can make her love him for all the wrong reasons. And going through it, like, when his idea of how he's going to make her fall in love with him doesn't work, he's just like, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to start killing myself every way possible. And then that's when the movie takes like a dark left turn. But then it comes out of it, and I guess, long story short, I appreciate the fact that the movie explores like every single avenue of reliving the same day, you know. I mean, like, it doesn't leave a lot of rocks unturned. But I think that's
stones. Rock, stones.
Who turns rocks?
Jesus, what the hell?
Who ever heard of that?
But, your wrap up is done.
It is, because I really, you know, I mean, I like the movie. I don't, you know, I mean, I think that even tonight, I think that you guys have a lot of cool theories about it. I still don't know if it's really time travel, but I think it's in that vein. And I think it's worth watching. I wish I would have thought of it during Groundhog Day, or at least during February. But yeah, I would definitely recommend it because it is a lot of fun, and I do own it, and I do watch it at least once or twice a year.
So. A week.
Oh, a week, a year.
Jesus.
All the time. A night.
But, caught in a, yeah. It'd be great if you were caught in this loop where you had to try and convince us.
That it was
time Groundhog travel. Day was a time travel movie, time and you just had to keep going over and over again.
That's that would be cool.
So that's Groundhog Day on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week we'll be back with a brand new podcast. We're going to be watching my pick of Brian De Palma's The Phantom of the Paradise. We're going to rock out in the basement next week, but until then, the basement is going dark.